fish, 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 fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said, fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
You lucky devils, he's back. And I mean RJ, you know, he showed back up today. I don't know where this happy RJ came from with the dancing around in the booth. The music's playing it. He's dancing. This ought to be, I'm not sure if it'd be good video. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be good video either. But
Fish and Frank here, Robert and Chair across from me, and RJ up in command and control. And getting a lot of rain, boys and girls. The river came up from a historic low of, like, I think the lowest I think it ever was, like 11 cubic feet a second or something like that. We're into 1,240 cubic feet per second, which is a really nice 6-foot flow on the Peace River. So that's awesome.
That explains the dark water in my canal.
Right.
All the water's getting dark. Yeah, it's all going that way. Quick update on the Fish and Frank's saga. Not Fish and Frank, but the store. Saturday, we are going to be at Shorty's Pub at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Myself and a lot of the gang, one of the biker clubs, we're having a little thing down there. They're, you know, one of those donation things or Fish and Frank party things. And then Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, we're going to be at Uncle Nick's Pizza. And extraordinary people over there. You know, that whole gang at Uncle Nick's is amazing. And the pizza's really good.
Yeah.
I just drug out. If you're going to keep pizza for a while and you wrap it in aluminum foil, not plastic, aluminum foil, pop it in the freezer. You could take it out in a month or two, and it's like the second day old pizza. You know, it's not like hot fresh, but it's like second day old. You know, next day pizza. Where if you wrap it in like saran wrap, it all dries out and gets nasty, and you don't want to eat it in 2 days. But if you wrap it in aluminum foil, put it in the freezer, because we had that big Fish and Frank's tear down, tearing all the memories off the building and everything.
Yeah.
So there was like 1.5 pizzas left. I wrapped them up tinfoil. I took some out last night. It was awesome. That was Uncle Nick's Pizza. And let's see, what else is going on? I had tournament meeting today. On, when is it going to be?
27th.
On Saturday the 27th. Now the tournament, from what we talked about today, right after, I mean, I think within a day, I wasn't
might
even
have been within hours, I think.
Within hours of Fish and Frank's burning down, you know, there was GoFundMe started and the tournament thing was started, big sponsorship and all that. And they wanted to do a shark tournament or a snook tournament. I'm like, you can't do those things. They're photo release tournaments, and which are technically pretty boring. They're not much fun. So I said, you know, one of the most democratic, not political party actions, things you can do is something that's good for everybody, is a nice old-fashioned saltwater catfish tournament. We've had people who won first place who were 9, 10, 11 years old, and some people in their 80s. Pretty much any age can win this. And you can fish from a dock, a seawall, a pier, go out in your boat. Anybody can fish this. Anybody can win it. You know, it's not like where you need a perfect lure and a perfect bait and all this.
Perfect
you need a
fishing,
yeah, you need a fishing pole, some line, and a hook and bait. You know, you can wrap some string around a Coke bottle, with a hook on it, throw it out in the water, and have a fair expectation of catching a catfish. And the one thing you always say about Fish and Frank's, whether you could barely afford the $2.50 for a dozen shrimp, or you could have bought and sold the building out of pocket change. You know, everybody, we wanted everybody to be able to fish. We did millionaires. We did homeless people. We worked with everybody. So to me, it's the most uniformly uniform fish anybody can catch. They said, we're going to do a women's tournament, a kids and a men's. I said, no. I said, the 8-year-old kid's got just as much chance as a 40-year-old man. Absolutely. Maybe better.
Maybe better, yeah.
Maybe better. The guy's going to get frustrated. The kid is going to hang in there, you know? Yeah. What do you think, RJ? Good choice or bad choice?
I think it's a good choice.
It's not a glamorous choice.
Well, no, it's not, but you got to remember, there's like billions of catfish out there.
Well, there was another thing. Talking to FWC, I went over some different fish and all this and about how many there was and all that. And I said, would you mind if we, you know, some catfish got killed? He went, nope. I went, yeah. Okay. That was a very quick answer. No. No, go ahead. Yeah. So.
And they're good eating. They're not going to go to waste. You're going to catch them. You're going to eat them.
You can eat them or not, or
but
whatever you're going to do.
It's not going to have a major impact on the environment.
It could have in a very strange way. Now, I'm going to take one of those Fish and Frank twists off the beaten path here.
Uh-oh.
And see if this makes sense to people. How many people keep and eat when they're open redfish or snook or trout or cobia? I would say probably at least 60% of the people who catch a redfish want to take it home and eat it.
Yeah, I'd probably go with that.
60%. I would say with snook, it's probably a little higher, maybe 70, 75%. Trout, got to be in the 70 to 80% range. Let's say 75% of the people want to keep those. Grouper, numbers are way higher.
Pretty much 99.9%.
99% right. of the people want to catch them. Keep them, eat them if they're legal size. Cobia, I'm going to say, again, in the 80, 90% range.
Easily 90%.
How many people catch and release the catfish they catch?
98%.
I mean, how many people actually eat them? I mean, it's probably 2, 3, 5% tops.
Right.
But I would say 2 to 3%.
Yeah.
And because they want to be good to the environment, they release them. So which fish has the most unfair advantage over the other species for as far as population dominance?
Catfish.
It makes sense, doesn't
it? It does. It does.
So if we had a catfish as a kind of level the playing field for other species of fish.
I'm 100% in agreement. Catfish tournaments should become a regular thing in the Suncoast.
Because everybody, you know, nobody has the heart to kill something if they're not going to eat it anymore.
Right.
So here we have basically, and now I'm not saying this is right. I'm not saying it's true, false, politically correct. I know it's not. But I'm saying this is a random thought I had. It was not part of the decision for catfish. The reason I chose catfish, because anybody can catch them. And they're kind of a nuisance fish. And one of the reasons I believe they're a nuisance fish is because everybody catches and releases. They kill all the species they want to eat. Because it's food and it's good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't that present the catfish with an unfair advantage?
Yeah. No, I think it does.
All right. Yeah. So
and catfish are good eating, right?
So oh, no, they're very
good eating. A lot of great recipes. Oh, and that brings up a point about recipes. A couple of weeks ago, I made some comment about mermaids, if you remember, right? And I
right.
And let me say, boys and girls, it was a joke. I do not endorse fishing for capturing, killing, and eating mermaids.
I'm not even sure though, I can even go though, along with that.
Even though FWC says there's no bag limit on mermaids. I checked.
Now, I'm going to say the catching and keeping. Now, I'm not sure I go along with the killing of mermaids, but do I have to catch and release if I get a mermaid?
No, probably not. But
I mean, I'm not going to catch and release, I don't think. Now, it depends on her attitude, but, you know.
Right, but what I want to say is stop sending me recipes.
For mermaids?
Yeah.
For sending
all of you
recipes?
That think that's funny, stop sending me recipes for cooking mermaids.
Nice.
I don't know. I've just never thought about a catch release of mermaids. My initial thought was, catch and release? I don't know. Do I? How long? What is the duration on catch and release?
Yeah, I have no
idea. I need at least 3 minutes.
Right.
So, okay. Let's see. We got all kinds of fish stuff to talk about. I forgot where I'm at. But what we're planning on with the catfish tournament, I'm kind of bouncing it by you guys, thinking about 4 o'clock Friday afternoon till 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. You got 24 hours of catfish, right?
Yeah. And there again, you know, it's sticking with the theme of anybody of age, business, whatever, boat, non-boat, can fish it. So if you have to work until whatever time, you still have a point to where you can participate in it. You know, it doesn't set anybody out. That's one of the best parts about the time, the species. You know, both those just should work for pretty much anybody that really wants to do it.
Well, you got 24 hours to go out and fish for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in the middle of the night, in the morning, in the evening, whatever you like, you got all of it to do.
Yeah, I can usually catch a catfish in less than an hour.
Yeah, and where
the
and
way
where
my
do we
fishing
find,
skills are some days.
That's right. Where do we find
I'm
going to
say yes unless I'm fishing for them.
This is true.
Because if you go out fishing for catfish, you're going to catch tarpon, you're going to catch snook. You're going to throw a big old chunk of dead bait on the bottom. Tarpon are going to pick it up. Sharks are going to pick it up. Snook are going to get it. All these fish are going to get it. You're going to be like getting a 4-foot snook going, damn it, I want a catfish.
That could be a whole a whole new attitude out on the water now.
Years ago when we were doing that tournament, we had guys catching tarpon who just they'd come in the morning, I can't believe it. All I caught all night long was tarpon. I only got this one little catfish. They'd be cussing these tarpon all night long.
Yeah.
But that's actually a very real thing that used to happen. So, anyway, I don't know. I just think, you know, everybody always wants to think of their tackle store as, you know, the marlin headquarters and the snook headquarters and all that. And I'm going to, if I go back in my head, I think, you know, so many people caught catfish over the years. We helped so many. We've helped them, you know, recommended medical treatment, non-medical treatment, how to do all this stuff. I mean, we've just been involved in it. And it's the one unifier, the one equaling fish out of all the fish in saltwater. You ain't getting away from it. Unless you're 100 miles out in the Gulf.
Right.
Now, speaking of, wonder why you don't catch many catfish out in the Gulf.
I don't understand that either. I mean, every now and then you seem to catch them from the beach, but I've never caught them at any of the nearshore wrecks.
When is the last time you've heard of somebody on a reef or a wreck catching a catfish?
I asked that question to one of the fishing clubs last year, and one guy said there was one day when he was fishing on Trembly Reef where he caught two hardhead catfish. And
RJ?
I looked at him, I was completely bewildered because I mean, I'm not a daily angler on any one of those reefs out there, but I've never caught a catfish out at any nearshore reef.
The little that I know, and don't quote me on this, go look it up, boys and girls, but I understand that catfish are depth sensitive. They don't do well at depth.
Because of the hollow head?
Yeah, whatever the reason is, they don't seem to like deep water because of the pressure. Because
the bones in their head are all hollow.
Yeah, that could be it.
The sail cat, when you actually has, you know, floating bones in its head and it's got a lot of hollow space in it. And it's the one where you take the skull of the sail cat and you dry it out. It looks like Jesus on the cross. And then when you shake it, the little bones in there rattle and it's supposed to symbolize the guards playing dice for the robes of Jesus. You okay?
Oh, crap. Jesus.
Did I do that?
No, I did that. Really?
Then we had a recording of Robert saying, oh, crap, so I just played it.
Oh, okay.
I just got set up for that one.
I don't even remember why he said it.
I don't know either, but anyway.
Josh gave that to him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, but to go back to
you lost me there. Sound effects and me are just, they're gone. Okay, but anyway, that could be it. RJ, as a diver, you ever saw any out there?
I've never seen them at depth, never.
Okay. So anyway, so anywhere inside, let's see. goodness.
Well, and you're going to have a lot more details about this tournament coming up on your website.
Next week and on the website and on Facebook and on all the other stuff. Rebuildfishandfranks.com is a big one.
Because it's still in the infancy process of fine-tuning everything. But
yeah,
you'll have a lot
by Monday night. By Monday night, everything will be finalized.
Yeah.
So we're going to start posting sponsors and doing all this stuff. And all of the money raised in that will go to one of two purposes. Now, it will either be used to rebuild Fish and Franks, providing I can find a location. Putting a bait shop somewhere has its own set of challenges. If we put our bait tanks, 2,000 gallons of salt water, freshwater tanks, we usually carry, what, about 600 gallons of freshwater, 2,000 gallons of salt water, the freezers, all that. We had blocked off a section in there, put exhaust fans on there, plus fans blowing through, and you still had all the sights, sounds, and smells of a real bait shop in there. You know, there were, you could still smell it. And before we took over most of the building, you could actually smell it in other units. So we can't just go anywhere, and if we put our bait tanks in a building, it will eat the drywall up in a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
It will destroy the inside of most buildings. So that's a tough thing to do. And then we have to find where we can pull in boats and trailers. You know, you got a truck and with a boat and, you know, a trailer, where do you park it? You know, we have to have big parking area. You know, we have to have a place we can put the bait tanks. We've, you know, and people say, well, you can use this store and go in there for, somebody just said that this morning to me. I said, you're right. So I'm going to go in, put in the bait tanks, plumb it all in, get all that running, hook up the filters. It's literally a lot of money. And then put up all the freezers, pegboard all the walls, put everything in, do all that so we can be in a place for 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking thousands of dollars worth of labor and time. Not that people wouldn't donate it, but, okay, we just helped you rebuild it. Okay, now you got to move to another building. We got to tear it all down and do it again.
Yeah.
That's a lot. So,
and busting your butt every day, it'd probably take 4 weeks of really hard work.
If I wasn't crippled up, we could probably put a store together in a couple weeks.
Right.
Without, I don't see an issue there. You know, be ready to put product up within a week or two.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just an amazing amount of work, and I'm crippled up right now. I can't hardly walk half the time. So sitting hurts, standing hurts.
This
you know?
Is actually the longest I've seen you sit.
Yeah, all day. But I ain't got much choice, so I'm just kind of grinning my teeth and bear it. But right now, it's like sitting on like a pyramid
mm-hmm.
on one side.
Stab yourself in the finger.
Yeah,
well, make it feel better.
Yeah, right now, if I stab myself in my right leg, I'll forget about how much my left leg hurts.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, getting into the fishing. It's that time. We spent 20 minutes talking about nonsense. I can't believe that went by that fast.
But it's all good stuff.
Oh, crap, kind of took me out of
it. Yeah, oh, crap.
I'm like, I'm looking at Robert, and I'm hearing him say this, and I'm like, oh, what, how? All right, let's see.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, conspiracy. we were talking about stuff that did not happen out in deep water, but one thing that does is grouper. Gag grouper opening up, but first I want to get into the red snapper. Now, red snapper season is open. And I would say 80% of the people who fish inside of Charlotte Harbor, the Intercoastal Waterway, Venice, Sarasota Bay, even Tampa Bay and all that, actually believe they're catching red snappers. The problem with it is a mangrove snapper, when it's caught in shallow water, or gray snapper, which mangrove snapper and gray snapper are the exact same fish, two different names, same fish. If you catch it inside, it has tendency to have an orangish-red belly on it. Sometimes more red than others, sometimes more orange than others. And pretty much most of the people on the piers are going, oh, we're catching red snapper.
Yeah.
No. I would say you're never going to catch a red snapper 99.95% of the time in less than 80 feet of water.
Right.
So unless you're on one really deep butt pier,
yeah,
you're not catching red snappers. Those are mangrove snappers. They just happen to have a red belly, but it doesn't make them a red snapper.
Yeah, yeah. You catch those mangrove snapper in the harbor or in the estuaries, the tannins stain their color or stain their body to a different color and all that. And if that same fish moves out into the Gulf, he becomes really light-colored and gray. So it's a little confusing for people when they're looking up on, let's say, the regulations. When you look through the regulations handbook, or if you've got the app with the FWC regulations on it, they call it a gray snapper. The entire state of Florida, it's classified as a gray snapper. But honestly, I don't know of any area except for up in the Jacksonville area where they call them gray snapper. Everywhere else I've been has always called them mangrove snapper.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. You know, it's a weird one because there's always usually little geographic areas where
look at a whiting. Yeah. A whiting is actually a southern kingfish.
Uh-huh.
It's not a whiting. It's a southern kingfish.
Right.
But kingfish to us are king mackerel.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, it's not uncommon. But, all right, with the red snapper being open, how far out right now I think most of the guys are going to be hitting that 100 to 120 feet of water.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that would be the low side of it. That's a realistic.
Can you go fish past 120 feet?
Not legally for red grouper.
But for other species, you can.
For other species, you can.
Okay, so a red grouper stops at 120.
Yeah, yeah. But there is a time frame on that, so I'm not 100% sure if that opened up where you couldn't keep. Because all winter long, it's been, what is it, the 60-fathom mark? Is that what it is?
Yeah, 120 feet.
120 feet was the mark where you could not keep red grouper. You had to be inside of 120 feet. But there's a time frame on that where it shuts off where you can now go out that far, but I'm not 100% when that opens for grouper. So to be on the safe side, if you're going to fish for red grouper.
So it means they paid the politicians enough to shut it down for a little while, but not enough for they would shut it down longer than that.
Correct. But your red snapper, which a lot of people call them American red snapper, but they're really just red snapper. You're looking at at least a bare minimum of 100 feet of water. Most guys will usually start in that 120 to 140 feet
of water. How big a hook?
You really don't need a real giant hook. It's obviously got to be an inline circle hook because it's still classified as a reef species. So in the owner or the VMC hooks, a 5-aught or a 6-aught is fine.
Now, see, for me, I'm going to say anywhere from a 3-aught all the way up to a 9-aught hook is good.
Yeah.
It really depends upon how big your bait is.
Yeah.
If you're using a smaller bait, like, say, a live shrimp, I'm going down to 3 or 4-aught.
Right.
Because they don't really want a great big hook with a little tiny bait on it, you know, even if it's a halfway decent-sized shrimp, you know.
Yeah.
But if I'm using a whole squid, for instance, and a lot of times fishing for the American reds or red snappers, what I do is I put the hook through a couple of times on the very head of the squid, and I let the tentacles and everything stay on, and I slow drop it down to the bottom. I don't free spool it to the bottom. I let it go down nice and easy and slow, giving them time to see it coming down. Make it look like a squid swimming down. I'm going to have my sinker at least, I would say, 3 to 4 feet away. Now, the trick to this is, if you do it too fast, your leader wraps around your line because the squid on there. So you got to do it nice and slow, and it takes a while to get to the bottom. You got to be really, really patient with this. But the good aspect of this is here that squid comes gliding down, and they have a lot of time to look at it. And they're seeing it, and then all of a sudden there it ends up on the bottom. And it almost like it got paralyzed and floated to the bottom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not thinking of like a squid swimming to the bottom. I'm thinking of like, okay, a squid swimming along, got wounded, he's half dead, and he's just kind of dropping, falling to the bottom. Still good to eat because he just came down, but easy to catch. And so you got that big old snapper watching, and all of a sudden here comes that squid, nice and easy, coming down to the bottom. Boom, it hits the bottom, and bang, you got that hit. But it gives them time to see it, locate it, and once it's laying on the bottom, they're waiting for it.
Right, and I'll bet that the majority of the time you actually get more hits before it even hits the bottom.
Oh, they'll come right up for it, yeah.
Because red snapper very much are really tight schooling fish where they almost create like a Christmas tree over some of these reefs, you know, like you would expect to see with bait fish.
Fishnado.
Yeah, exactly. Upside down fishnado.
Fishnado. But Christmas trees.
The one thing that people have learned over the last several years is that – you know, usually your bigger fish are the smarter ones sitting on the bottom closest to structure, and the little ones are the ones that kind of just the spazzes and get caught first. But with red snapper, when they get in some of those big schools like that over the reefs, it's actually the reverse. Your larger red snapper are usually sitting up above the smaller snapper. So a lot of people make the mistake and sink it down so fast, they go right to the bottom and they catch the smaller snapper, versus if you go down very slow like you're talking about, or guesstimate where you know that, let's say you're in 120 feet of water and there's 40 feet of fish, try to stop somewhere with about 90 feet of line out, so that way you're somewhere in the center of that mass of fish, and that's where your better chance of getting a much larger red snapper is. And they're not the best for catch and release because you're usually zinging them up pretty quick out of that water. The limit's only two. You usually catch your limit on either the first drop or the second drop, because some guys use two hooks on their rigs. So a lot of times it's dropped down once and you've got your limit of fish. It's done. But that's where you got to be prepared to use other techniques for a lot of other species that'll be hanging out there, because at that depth of water, once you get past 100 feet of water, you've eliminated a lot of anglers because they don't have the boats or the mileage or whatever that can do that. You've got so many other species that you can start targeting. Scamp, one of your father's most favorite fish, were some of the porgies, like the red porgy and the champagne porgy and the knobhead porgy. Those fish are more common in that deeper water too, and those are some really fine eating fish. I mean, he taught me that 18 years ago probably. You know, so there's a lot of other species that you can catch while doing that and having the smaller hooks.
Now,
and the smaller
what are you going to do different
bait
for the grouper than you would for the red snapper, outside of let it hit the bottom quicker?
Let it hit the bottom
but
quicker.
But if you were catching snapper in an area, the only way I think you're going to get away from that is to move a little bit. Let out 10 feet anchor line.
Yeah, yeah, move off the school.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're going to have to let out some more anchor line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, otherwise, you're just dropping back into them. You're not going to change the effect no matter what you do.
Right.
Because once you're on a school of snapper, you're on them.
Yeah.
Now, if you drop down, you get a couple other things, then you accidentally run into a red snapper, you're okay to fish that spot. But if you drop down and you bang a couple of snappers right away, you drop down again, you do it again, that's what you're in for in that spot. Let out some anchor line. Get away from them a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to have to be, if you're in 100 feet of water, you're going to have put out an extra 15 feet anchor line to really move off of the school properly.
Yeah, yeah, at least probably. You know, and the other thing is, you're out there that far, there's a lot of really cool areas that are on maps that you can go fish that hardly ever get fished, so it's not like even though it's a common number, you know that it doesn't have the pressure of something inside of 20 miles does. And then a lot of times you can just start to go out there and find a different hard bottom spot that doesn't have that Christmas tree on it, but you're still seeing fish closer to the bottom. Now you know you're into less snapper and possibly different species of snapper, whether it's mangroves, lanes. Even out there, you start to get into the vermilion snapper, too, the beeliners. You know, so you can hopscotch around a little bit to some of those other harder bottoms or man-made reefs that are out there, because there's some sunken subs out there, other boats. I mean, there's all sorts of crazy stuff that's quite a ways out there that hardly ever gets fished.
That's right. And I'd have to say, too, diving the deep reefs, the snapper schools, the red snapper schools, are very cohesive. There's not any other – usually I don't ever see any other species of fish in that cluster, you know, whether because the red snappers are aggressive enough to chase the other fish away. So you're right. You move away from – but they also seem to stay in place. They're not moving all over the reef. They stay in that one particular area that they've locked out for themselves, and all the other guys are out around them and underneath them. So you're right. If you've got your limit of snapper and you don't want to kill a couple more by, you know, pulling them up from 120 feet, you move off of that spot.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other fascinating part about that depth of water is all the pelagic fish that start to show up at that point. And this is the perfect time of year for dolphin, tuna. King mackerel are out there pretty much year-round at that depth of water. But when you get into 120 feet of water, now you have a chance of a wahoo also.
Mm-hmm.
And sailfish, very realistic. And a lot of people don't really associate, like, Southwest Florida with wahoo. But at 120 feet of water, that starts that number for wahoo. So you can even go slow troll around or even speed troll to see if you can find other species of fish while you're going to the next spot. It's pretty awesome. And you're already out there anyway. What's the extra little bit of time?
And there's so much to explore. Like you said, there's so much to explore on the bottom when you get out to around 100, 150 feet, somewhere in that bracket. There is so much stuff on the bottom out there.
Right.
Like you say, subs and ships and things that have been dumped out there from construction, all kinds of cool stuff.
What rod, what line, reel, leader, swivel, sinker, break it down.
Well, I mean, for honestly, for just...
How long a rod?
Short, very short. I'm going to go with 5.5 to no longer than 6.5, and I'm going to pretty much use a jigging rod. You know, like the Penn Rampage jigging rod is a great one, or the Shakespeare Tiger Elite. Those two jigging rods are pretty amazing.
Six
to me.
Foot's actually kind of nice at this point. A little bit less, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But all you're doing is reeling. Yeah. And what a lot of the guys forget is you're not setting the hook. You don't need to lift the rod up. You just want to crank.
Right.
I think the reel's more important than the rod.
Oh, absolutely. I want something with a super high gear ratio and preferably two-speed.
I want a two-speed, period. Yeah. Why not just spend another $80, $100 on a reel that will actually catch fish with? By the time you buy the gas and all this and all that to get out there, throw another $100 on the deal is not that big a thing. No. You know, if you do, let's say you do four trips, it's an extra $25 a trip. Big deal. The thing is, if you got a two-speed, you start in low gear, we got mega power, and you just start cranking like crazy. And then the rod, 6 foot, little less, little more, you're going to be able to hold it, but it's that low gear in the reel that's going to get them off the bottom for you.
Yeah.
And you're just holding on to that darn rod. Then all of a sudden, they quit fighting. I think they get the bends at that point. The stomach starts coming out of their mouth. So now it's all about how fast can you get them to the top.
Right.
If you get a single speed reel, you have a hard time getting them up from the bottom because you don't have the power. But if you got a very low geared reel, it'll take you a half hour to get them to the surface. So you need one that's less, you know, three to one on one gear, 6 to 1 on the other.
Right.
You know, preferably over 6 to 1 and under 3 to 1. But, you know, 3 and 6 are the two gears you're looking for. That way you got tons of power on the low end, and then as soon as they stop fighting, hit high gear and zip them up as fast as you can to the surface, or the dolphins, the Goliath grouper, the sharks, the
every
barracuda,
other predator.
Everything yeah. else is going to try and eat them.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to say the reel to me is the big deal. I want something like a Pen Fathom 2-speed or a 30, around a 30, could be a 25, 30. I don't need much bigger than that because it's too heavy. The very small TLD 2-speeds, you know, just any of the 2-speed reels.
What would you be using for line, for your main line? Do you prefer braid or do you prefer mono out there?
If it was me, I'd have probably 40-pound mono or 30 or 40-pound mono. But today's world, I'm going to say 65-pound test braid is where I'm going to be.
Okay. Now, and I'm going to agree with you on it. Because I already know what some of the problems can be with using braid line on a conventional reel.
What's that?
It wants to dig into itself. You know, once you've let it out once or twice, now it's loaded back onto the spool semi-loosely. So once you hook into something with a little bit of size on it, it starts to want to dig into itself and bury a little bit. And that can get a little frustrating when you're trying to let out some line again on the next go-around. And sometimes it can pop if it digs into itself on that next fish because it buried in so quick and hard.
And this would be the kind where a level line reel would be really nice, you know, one that guides the line on mm-hmm. for you, because it kind of cross-wraps the line. The problem is with a level line, something else to go wrong. And that's that stupid Pawl gear, P-A-W-L, that Paul Gear goes along a little, can't remember the name of the shaft, but
it's basically a track.
Yeah, there's a little grooves cut in that track that make it go one side to the other. And it's little tiny, tiny Mickey Mouse ears. That it's a little U-shaped thing welded to a like a small round cylinder. When you have a reel that has that level wind where it brings the line back and forth as you reel it in, turn it upside down. You'll see on the bottom a cap. Unscrew that cap, set the cap down, then carefully turn the reel back right side up. Give it a little tap, and you'll see the Paul Gear fall out. And it's a round shaft with literally a Mickey Mouse ears on the top. It's a kind of a U-shaped thing. And that little tiny bit of metal is what goes back and forth through that groove. 99% of the time, you have a level wind, and all of a sudden it'll just stick on one side. It won't want to come back across. It'll go to one side and just stick there, stick there, stick there, stick there. And you take it out, and you look at the Paul Gear, and it's fine. You cannot tell. It's literally a 32nd of an inch or a 64th of an inch that keeps that in the right play. A little bit bent, a little bit worn out, and it won't work. So if you have one of those and you want that level wind so that your line doesn't dig in on itself, now you run into the problem that you have to know how to take that cap off and get the Paul Gear out of it. Just let it drop to the floor of the boat, put the cap back on, and then you can thumb the line back and forth.
Right.
But if that Paul Gear is in there, it's going to stick to one side. It might be all the way to the left or all the way to the right, but you can't get it to go back and forth across there. So you got to be able to pull the Paul Gear out so you can manually back and forth with your thumb.
Plus, the other drawback to a level wind reel is that you can't get it in a two-speed. It's a fixed gear.
Yeah. So yeah, that's true.
Now, that's one of the disadvantages of it. And they're not always a very high gear ratioed reel. Usually, they're like 3-to-1. Maybe if you're really lucky, it might be 4.
No, you get some in the 4s.
Right.
4.6-to-1 or something like that. Right. But it's hard to get them up. You might find one in 5.2-to-1 or 5.3-to-1.
Right.
But problem that you have, those are just tough. Now, the one thing I try and tell people when you're grouper fishing, and if you've got a, you know, conventional reel and you're going, you don't need to keep pushing a line from side to side. Let it build up on a little hill, then just push it off the hill. And once it builds up again, push it again. And just let it build up little piles of line on there and just keep knocking it over. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt anything.
No.
You don't have to sit there and constantly push it one side to the other, one side to the other, pretending your thumb's a level wind. It's not necessary. You know, you're always going to be reeling up at some point during the day without a fish on that you can correct the line better again.
Right.
Absolutely. But when I get a fish on, the idea is to get it up. But now if you let it just keep building up, it will bind up against the body of the reel, and it'll lock you up. You got to let all that line out, then reload it back on again. So you got to be careful not to let the humps get too high, but you don't have to sit there and dote on it pushing back and forth. So let's say for realistic purpose, you got 30-pound mono or you got 50, 65-pound test braid.
Okay.
What leader are you using?
Just for the red snapper, I'm honestly probably going to not use anything more than about 30-pound, maybe 40-pound.
All right.
You know, because they're usually not going to run into the structure, so you're not having to fight that as much. So I don't really necessarily need it for the abrasion resistance, but they also have really exceptionally good eyesight. So if I can get away with that little bit thinner diameter, even though I'm going to be using fluorocarbon, still a little bit thinner diameter has a little bit less presence in the water.
So you're going to be 25, preferably 30, but maybe as high as 40.
Yeah.
Somewhere 30 ideal, 25 on the light side, 40 on the high side.
Correct.
We talked about the hook. Literally, you go 3-aught, 4-aught, all the way up to a 9-aught. Because they got big mouths.
So
if you got a great big piece of bait, like and you want to stick a 9-aught hook in there, go right ahead.
Right. The only one thing that you do have to do, though, is you need to bring an assortment of lead with you. Because when you start to get out to that depth of water, there's so many different undertows and currents and stuff that work against you or for you, depending. You know, the surface might appear to be slack, but once you hit that 50-foot mark, there might be a cold water or warm water upwelling coming, and you actually might need as much as, you know, 16 ounces of lead to keep your line vertical, even with as thin as braid line is.
So this would be something similar to when you're tarpon fishing in Boca Grande Pass.
Right.
You got to watch your line. You're dropping it straight down, but if it starts moving left, right, forward, or backwards, well, A, you probably have a fish. B, it could be the current keeping you from actually staying on the bottom. It could be just drifting up and moving away.
Yeah.
The only way you can really tell is if your line stays straight up and down. As soon as you see it going left to right, forward or back, that means something's bad's happening. Do you notice a big difference, RJ, when you're diving between surface current and bottom current?
There's sometimes when you dive a reef, especially if you're going to do photography, you might have to drop the anchor line down and hang on to the anchor line if you want to come down on the spot where you want to be. And sometimes you got to work pretty hard to stay in that space, yeah. And the other thing is changes in temperature are always amazing. You're going down, the water's one temperature, and all of a sudden it gets really cold. And then you get down another 20, 30 feet, and the water gets warm again. So there's all of that stuff going on.
That's what, a thermocline?
Thermocline, right. And sometimes when you get to the thermoclines at the space where the hot water and the cold water comes together, there's going to be current there, and it's going to be pretty swift. So it might push you away, or it might push you up, or it might even push you down. So, yeah, there's all kinds of currents and stuff going on, especially out over 100 feet.
So therein lies the big reason. All you can do is watch your line and see which way it's going.
Watch the line, right.
And if it's moving too quick, got to put a bigger sinker on.
Yep. Which is why I kind of, for me personally, for that type of fishing, I like that what they call a porgy rig or a chicken rig, where my sinker is on the bottom below my hook, because then I can change the sinker out much quicker without having to cut all my leader apart, because I just tie a loop on the bottom of my rig, and I can just put it through the eyelet of that sinker and pop it on and off very quickly.
Got to go back all the way inside for a minute. Now is the time to hit the spillways. They're all flowing.
Oh, yeah.
Spillways are flowing. What do the spillways bring, boys and girls? Alex, I'll take tarpon and snook for 500.
Yeah. Yeah, the spillways are just pushing a lot of different weak swimming fish over, basically, along with tadpoles and frogs and who knows what other critters.
And but they all, tarpon eat insects. People don't realize that. Tarpon like eating bugs.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, boys, flies, okay? But tarpon like bugs, grasshoppers, they eat tadpoles, they eat frogs, they eat all that stuff, so do snook. Mm-hmm. So they're laying at the bottom of that dam waiting for these floodwaters to bring all these unsuspecting little critters over the dam. And dinner time.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I'm also hearing a lot of frogs lately in my neighborhood by El Jobin, by the Mayaca River. So there must have been a very large hatch, and they've gone from tadpole to frog now. There's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of noise at night.
They do that pretty quickly, though, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, they go from eggs to tadpoles really quickly, but all the frogs, that's just them congregating around that water hole that finally formed. And now you should be seeing a lot of tadpoles hatching out, because it's, I think, from egg to tadpole, depending on the species, 7 to 14 days.
And
pretty quick.
When you start hearing all that, most of that's boy calling girl, girl calling boy, because it's like, okay, we got water, let's do this, got to get it now,
yep.
You know, closing time, 2 a.m. is right around the corner here, let's get this on now.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So all those, and each time it rains, it will disturb that and push them around. It'll push those eggs and break those eggs loose from some of the grass. You know, because they like to lay their eggs up pretty shallow so it's not in any current and usually a little bit less predators. But if you get enough heavy enough rain, it'll actually break those eggs loose. Those tadpoles are very weak swimmers. They like to stay up in those shallows. If it dumps hard enough, it'll still continually move new food sources over those spill dams. So it doesn't always die off in that first week of that water flowing. sometimes if you just get one really good afternoon deluge, it'll push another little batch of food over and get those fish reinvigorated.
And this is anywhere where you have fresh water dumping into salt water. So all along U.S. 41, you can find it at Taylor Road Dam. In Port Charlotte, there's six dams to fish. Northport has a ton of them. They're all over the place. It's real easy to find in Google Earth. I mean, You just look for the Myakka River, follow up a canal until you see a dam. That's where you want to be fishing. Now, if you're along Hillsborough Ave, the 9 Mile Cocoa Plum, all the dams and spillways, same thing's happening in freshwater. The largemouth bass, the bluegills, pretty much everything is trying to congregate under the spillways, because all the babies are being pushed over because it's still, you know, technically springtime. So for as far as fish, the spawn's over, the fish are hatching, and all the babies are being pushed around by the current right now. Mm-hmm. So you got a lot of fry going back and forth. So whether it's freshwater into freshwater or salt freshwater into saltwater, all great places to fish. Heading back out into the Gulf of Mexico, 3 to 15 miles out, over, I would say, probably 20% of the reefs right now, permit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And big permit, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the main thing you want to look for is man-made reefs. You know, for some reason, they don't tend to congregate over natural bottom. They like stuff with some relief, whether it's 2 feet of relief or 20 feet of relief. But it seems like the more relief you have coming off of one of those reefs, the better the permit are.
Which basically is a fancy word for how high does the structure come off the bottom. If you've got 8 or 10 feet of height to the man-made reef, it's going to hold a lot more permit than one that comes up 2 to 4 feet off the bottom. The taller the reef is, shipwrecks, crane dumps, you know, anything which would land on its end and stick way up in the water, you're going to have a lot more permit on it. The taller the structure is, the more permit want to hang on it.
Absolutely. You know, and these guys are catching them from 20 being the average size to as much as, you know, up to 30, 35 pounds. You know, a couple weeks ago, there was a couple guys that got into some bigger fish, but the vast majority of them are still that 20 to 25-pound range. And what was the guy at the Burnt Store Anglers Club saying? How many did he catch the other day?
We got like 18.
Yeah, him and his buddy caught like 18, all 20 pounds plus. You know, so there's some pretty fabulous fishing out there. And the thing is that they do like it when the current is moving a little bit more. So going out there during a slack tide over those reefs, for some reason, you'll see a lot of them, but they don't chew as well. So
you want some moving water.
Yeah, it's one of the few fish there I think that moving water really makes a big difference with out there.
All right. Back into the freshwater for just a minute. Frogs, big thing right now. Mm-hmm. Like RJ's saying, the frogs are all screaming, come on, you know, you look good, honey. Come over here, talk to me. You know, I'm handsome. Come on, you know. So they got all this mating croaking going on. And so when you're out there freshwater fishing, this is prime time for throwing topwater frogs, whether they're hollow bodies, you know, hearts or complete soft plastic. Frogs, frogs, frogs. Make them dance across. But if you got a lot of weeds, get some WD-40 or some fish oil, anise oil scents.
Procure.
Anything. But not as much Procure in this instance. What I'm looking for is more of an oil-based spray, because I'm using it as a lubricant for the bait to slide across the surface of the grass.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter if it's got the right smell or not. It's sitting up on the surface. So these fish are going to be blowing up underneath. But if it's the plastic gets sticky, you know how plastic sometimes doesn't want to slide?
Yeah.
It sticks to the grass and the lily pads and makes it really hard to work them. I'm using oils on them, any kind of spray oil, whether it's WD-40, which is fish oil. That's why WD-40 works. Nice lubricant, fish oil. Or Bang is a good freshwater spray. Any of the sprays for lures that are oil-based, not so much the grease-based like Procure. Procure is a great scent, but it's not good. You know, it doesn't help it slide through the weeds.
Right. Just trying to reduce your friction, basically, and increase your chance of getting it to work more effectively with less effort.
Exactly. It's one of those weird things. I'm not using a scent as a scent. I'm using it to lubricate the bait so it slides across grass better.
Makes sense.
Jumping back out into the harbor this time, tons of sharks. Where are they, Robert?
Yeah, there's a lot of the little sharks from Pirate Harbor going out through the straits towards Boca Grande. Black-nosed sharks, black-tip sharks, Atlantic sharp-nosed. Even been a few nurse sharks and bull sharks mixed in with them that are a little bit bigger, but those 2.5 to 4 foot sharks are in pretty good numbers out there. It seems like they're being a little bit better when you're finding some schools of bait on the surface, but you know, sometimes it's as simple as moving literally 100 yards because one guy said he did great in Pirate Harbor hole. Josh went there that same day in the afternoon, and that guy was there supposedly in the morning. Josh had a hard time finding them, but he moved a couple hundred yards down and got into them again. So sometimes just either pull your anchor and set up a little drift and then get back into them again.
All right. Well, one of the things about the rain is it's going to freshen up the harbor a little bit as far as adding fresh water to the mix, which always adds brown tannic water. The water as it comes down the river is dyed brown by the leaves of the plants. Doesn't make it dirty water, just makes it brown water. Good news is you're going to be able to get a lot closer to your fish. Bad news is you're not going to have that sight fishing capability. As that brown water goes further and further out into the harbor, you're going to have less and less visibility of seeing fish, but they have less and less visibility of seeing you. So I hope you remember where those holes were. I hope you remember where the creek mouths were. Because you're going to have to locate them by memory, but you can be a lot closer and still catch a lot of fish. You can put it down that 8-foot rod, pick up your regular 7-foot rod, and start having some fun with that. You don't have to do the long distance casting as much. But Fishing Frank here, while Fishing Frank's is looking to either, we're trying to get it back. We got to find a place. So we're looking for a place, trying to get the store back. Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and in command and in control and ever and ever and ever. He's kind of like, what is that, to infinity and beyond guy, RJ. Bye. Fish, 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 fish.